Great to speak with you today again, Mitch. We're going to start with a story that was in the weekly press release last week from Normal. Cannabinoids offer novel option for brain cancer treatment, study says. And we're going to talk a little bit further about many of the anti-cancer properties of cannabinoids that have been discovered in the last few years. But let's touch on this story right away. It starts out, you know, cannabinoids possess anti-tumor activity in glioblastoma cell lines. Basically, it kills brain tumors. This is a pretty amazing thing and something they haven't found another medication for.
It's a wild finding, and I don't want to overstate the situation, but it really does look promising. And when you think about how complicated cancer is and how prevalent it really is, a big killer throughout the world, this is an intriguing pathway for new anti-cancer drugs. I don't want to give people the impression that, you know, smoking cannabis is some kind of new anti-cancer therapy. It's just that we're discovering more and more that the cannabinoid system is markedly more complicated and markedly more interesting than we ever dreamed.
And using these exogenous cannabinoids like THC and cannabidiol that come from the cannabis plant to manipulate the endocannabinoid system, this is something that it's emerging research. This is something that's sort of brand new to medical science.
Oh, it's to the point where, in fact, I think even the scientists involved are surprised. And it's curious, you have to sort of understand how a tumor grows. And a tumor, you know, you think of some dark, nasty, horrible-looking thing. In fact, it's really live, pink tissue that has to, you know, get stuff from the host. It has to get blood and nutrients and stuff like that. And the cannabinoids seem to be involved in basically cutting it off, making it sure it doesn't get the kinds of things that would help it be this big, healthy tumor. And in fact, that's exactly what we want. And that's why both in, you know, animal studies now and even some intracranial stuff with tumor growth in humans, the cannabinoid drugs are really showing a lot of promise. I think it's really exciting.
You know, let me also ask you too, Mitch, as somebody who is, you know, a published author in peer-reviewed journals, this latest study came out in the Expert Review of Neurotherapeutics, and it does talk about what you just touched on, the selective ability of cannabinoids to target the tumor cells specifically. It is being published in these journals. There seems to be some sort of academic acceptance of this kind of research, but is there enthusiasm for it now? I mean, is there a sense that cannabinoids are this exciting new realm?
Well, it's interesting because, in 2006, we saw some data come out in Spain where the attitudes about cannabis itself are markedly different. And I think in some ways there's a lot of regional variation on this. None of these scientists are saying, oh, and by the way, this has a lot to do with medical cannabis or other issues like that. We're really talking about THC at the molecular level, so it's a different set of issues. What I do find is more and more mainstream journals, especially if it's really focused at the cellular level, are open to this kind of thing. And you don't even see the little paragraphs in the discussion section with the little disclaimers that you used to see back in, say, the late 90s, where it would say, we know this doesn't mean anything about medical cannabis. Now people don't even bother with that. And I think that's a sign that people understand that the science really needs to be separate from the politics and that we should let the data be our guide rather than any crazy political agenda.
Yeah, we've talked about this sort of catch-22 in the past year. I've spoken with you and with John Morgan and Paul Armentano and even Alan St. Pierre. Note that there is, although the science and the data do need to be separated from the politics, unless the politics and the policy changes a bit, we won't get as much data anymore.
The sad thing is, particularly at the human level, we see a lot of impediments under those realms. So, yeah, it's easy to explain to a granting agency that you want to use a THC extract or a synthetic THC in some kind of rodent model, but as soon as you take the next step and say, okay, now we want to apply this in humans, that's where we see a lot of feet dragging, at least here in the U.S. But now that we've got data coming out of Italy, data coming out of Spain, and throughout Europe, I think, in fact, you know, the United States is going to get behind on this. We're not going to have the best clinical trials on this when it comes to human data. And I you know, hate to say it, but I think the drug companies there are going to have a big advantage over the drug companies here as far as developing lines of cannabinoid drugs in the treatment of cancer and then related problems.
And we've already seen that in some ways with Sativex and GW Pharmaceuticals' successful winning of prescription status for that in some countries. Well, you know, and this is very interesting because just this week there was a lot of media fur over this sort of reefer madness story out of New Zealand. We touched on it yesterday with Paul. And this is old data. Just last, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, we did a long thing with Paul and with you about the smoking machines and lung cancer risks. So how do we countenance this, the fact that the individual cannabinoids within the cannabis plant are found to have all these anti-cancer properties, that Tashkin's data shows that moderate cannabis users are, in fact, at a somewhat decreased risk for lung cancer in California, at least. But then there's this concern over the hydrocarbons in smoking itself. So how do we figure all this out? I mean, is there going to be some definitive test that can tell us about the safety of inhaled cannabis and its potential for cancer or anti-cancer out there?
I mean, it's going to be no surprise to you or any of our listeners that I would run to the vaporizer explanation. I'm finding more and more people who are really clearly misinformed about cannabis and even some of the lung data are still willing to follow the line of reasoning that the vaporizer will create a mist that holds cannabinoids in it that doesn't have the tars and other carcinogens associated with actually igniting the plant. And suddenly they're nodding their heads when I talk about that part in a way that really surprises me, that they often don't quite believe Tashkin's data and the long-term smokers actually not being at all at risk for lung cancer. So there's something about going from smoke to vapor that I think people find intuitively appealing. And in fact, you know, my data and Don Abrams' data suggest this really is a wonderful way to administer the cannabinoids and something that shows a lot of promise with literally none of the respiratory problems associated with them.
Let's have a little fun here, Mitch. Let's say that you as a research scientist had an almost unlimited amount of funding. Let's say you had a grant for, you know, $100 million. Would you be able to put together the kind of research that would definitively put this question to rest? What would it take?
I think I could do it, but it would take a tremendous amount of time. The only thing that people are finding persuasive anymore are these longitudinal data sets like Don Tashkin has. And the irony is he's been gathering this stuff since the late 80s. You know, so here we are, we've got people who are sick right now, and I'm going to have to say, okay, a 10-year follow-up, comparing two groups, one with vaporizer and one with smoked cannabis, and we're going to look at, you know, every single correlate about, you know, what air they breathed and what cigarette they smoked and everything else. And it would take literally a decade. And then, unfortunately, what would happen is people would say, oh, well, it hasn't been a long enough time. You know, the fact that we really don't have, you know, cannabis-only smokers getting lung cancer at rates higher than people who don't smoke at all, here, you know, we've got the data as best as we can right now. This is markedly like, you know, where we've seen things go with cigarettes before when people realized, hey, cigarettes, we've got the data now, they really are carcinogens, and here we have comparable data with cannabis with comparable duration saying, no, you know, it's just not happening. So I feel like even with that unlimited amount of money, I don't have time now. We got people who are sick now. And then the other irony is, of course, you know, if you've got cancer and AIDS and wasting and things like that, do you really care about developing lung cancer 20 years from now? Of course not. It's just an absurd question on all levels. And particularly given both the laboratory evidence and the correlational stuff I have on the vaporizer, it just seems immoral to waste people's time on something like this when the medicine's right there and markedly safer than stuff we can get over the counter.
Yeah, you know, and that brings up sort of the other extreme here. I mean, we've been talking about sort of proving the safety and finding out these things to the nth degree in the molecular level in some cases here, but don't we as a culture accept a certain amount of risk in our medications and our medical treatment already? Risk that is just not there with cannabis, that is there with even the most common over-the-counter medications out there today.
I mean, and the funny thing is, so, you know, all the over-counter antihistamines, all of those kinds of things, of course, we have data suggest they're safe, but they're certainly no more safe than cannabis. But the other things we do in life, people are allowed to bungee jump, you can ride a motorcycle, you can drive a car, you can do anything you want in all these other domains that people will say, yes, this is in fact a risky behavior, and you take certain steps to make sure it's not risky, isn't that really all we ask of our fellow citizens? And of course, we do things to make sure we don't harm each other. Well, here's use of a plant with, you know, literally an 8,000-year history with extremely limited negative consequences and absolutely no harm done to other people. What more do we want? What other data would it really take to convince folks? It's astounding.
Very interesting. Well, you know, even as that philosophical argument rages, there will be this undeniable set of research, as you mentioned out there before, as the research sort of speaks for itself out there. As this anti-cancer research becomes more prevalent, and of course we know that cancer rates are, of course, rising in almost all populations, especially in Western countries like Europe and right here in the United States, it's an issue we have to deal with every day. Won't there be some sort of outcry from the public for some new research? I mean, we hear all the time about the investment made into cancer research, especially when it comes to the sort of media darling cancers. I hate to put it that way, but like breast cancer and the like, we hear about huge investments of tax dollars, private foundations into this kind of thing. When will that money come into cannabinoid research, do you think?
Well, it's interesting because even with the ones that get more press, breast carcinoma and things like that, the preclinical studies are making it clear that cannabinoids have a whole lot of potential. And I feel like, especially as the country is aging and these things become more prevalent, we're going to get a bigger outcry. I feel like the thing to do is to say, rather than waiting until you have it or someone you know has it, let's jump ahead just a little bit. Let's rally around our congressional leaders who are actually approving the funding for these kinds of things and make sure this line of research doesn't die in order to essentially go down a blind alley that we don't know if it's going to have as much potential as this one or not, and really show that, especially for people who fail the standard therapies like surgery and radiotherapy and stuff like that, this has got to be available in order to help decrease tumor growth.
Well, and also, too, I mean, I think that even the patients who have survived cancer and frankly, survived the treatments, there's been an outcry to change the way we even treat cancer, not only because a lot of those therapies aren't successful with the most aggressive forms of cancer, and when you talk about brain cancer, that is often an inoperable form of cancer, but also because the treatments themselves are just so incredibly harsh, and often, again, sometimes the treatments do more harm than good to the patients themselves. So even cancer survivors say that there's got to be a different way to treat it out there.
I agree wholeheartedly, and when you watch the aversiveness of the chemotherapies, for example, and that they're often administered in situations where you're really just trying to prevent a return, it's not that the cancer is even present any longer, it would just really warm my heart to think that there'd be a cannabinoid drug that could help people sidestep that, because it is truly, truly gruesome.
You know, I want people to understand, too, when we talk about changing the face of cancer treatment with the type of cannabinoid therapies that are being experimented on right now, it would be the difference between, you know, finding out you have cancer and then going in for chemotherapy regimens that last weeks and months and leave your body racked, or radiotherapy regimens that do the same, or even extreme surgeries that can be life-altering surgeries in and of themselves. These drugs would be administered directly to the cancer cells in many of the ways they do it in the lab, just directly to the cancer tumor itself. And that would be it. A simple injection would be the extent of the treatment, I assume, here.
I don't think that's at all science fiction. I really feel like there's the potential for that kind of thing, particularly given the preclinical trials showing that tumor growth can decrease dramatically in response to these kinds of medications.
I hate to ask one more broad philosophical question here, but with that kind of sea change in medicine and the way we treat cancer, a very common form of medical treatment in this country, and frankly, Mitch, a very lucrative form of treatment as well. I mean, radiotherapy, chemotherapy, surgeries, this stuff isn't cheap, and there's essentially a huge industry built up around this right now. Is this also, I mean, are we getting into the realm where this research is so revolutionary that it's sort of like decriminalizing or legalizing marijuana, that you get the sort of entrenched arguments from law enforcement on that? And will there be the entrenched industry lobby if these drugs are so successful in the future, do you think?
Most of the folks I know who are associated with particularly the chemotherapies actually understand and don't have the sort of foot dragging you'd associate with people who are just in it for a buck. They really understand that there's got to be an improvement on this. And in fact, things have improved dramatically in the last 5 years or so. What I do see happening is people don't appreciate that, in fact, if these cannabinoid medications were available to decrease the use of chemotherapy, the medical use of smoked and vaporized cannabis would actually drop. And I think, I don't want to lose the medical cannabis users and make sure that they, you know, still have their rights to use it if they need it. What's funny is, if we had cannabinoid meds that were decreasing tumor size and preventing the return of tumors, nobody would be so ill from chemotherapy that they would actually have to have the anti-nausea cannabis anyway. So it's kind of a curious way where the cannabinoid medicine could actually decrease the need for medical cannabis.
Very, very interesting. Well, Mitch, this has been a fascinating discussion, as always, here today. I know we touched on a lot of topics, and folks can also check out an updated version of Normal's report, Emerging Clinical Applications for Cannabis and Cannabinoids. There's an updated version of that online at normal.org, and we have direct links right up at normalaudiostash.com, and it reviews nearly 200 studies on the therapeutic use of cannabis, and a lot in there on cancer as well. Mitch, thank you again for joining us today. I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Oh, me too. Take care.